This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Kevin McCarthy joins us now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. God only knows where he's calling in from. What's up, Kevin? Good morning.
Good morning, Cake Batter. How are you, sir?
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Cake batter. I miss saying cake batter. Can I call you once a week just randomly just and say cake batter and hang up?
That's fine.
Okay, good. I'm definitely going to do that. By the way, before we get to the movie reviews, can I just mention one thing? Luckily, over the years, like from being on your show, like people will say hi to me if I'm in a mall or whatever. But yesterday, this gentleman named Dave, I just want to give him a shout out because he's like a massive Junkies listener, and he, I guess when he said he moved to Albuquerque for work at one point, he still listened to the podcast. He listens all the time. He loves the show, and he couldn't have been nicer. So just want to give a shout out to him. I know he said he's going to be listening specifically this morning at 7 a.m. So, hey, Dave, just want to say hi.
All right, there's your shout out.
Kevin, shout out.
So before we get to the movies you've seen, you're going to go see Chappaquiddick tonight, correct?
Yes. And Jason and I have been texting for the past couple days. My schedule has been nuts with like my travel. I went home to visit my brother who just had a baby, so I haven't actually got to see yet. But I'm watching Chappaquiddick tonight, and I will text you afterwards, probably around 9-ish. So are you still going to be awake at that point, or are you going to be asleep?
Tonight at 9? No, it's Friday night. I'll be awake.
All right. What does Jason Bishop do on a Friday night? I would love to, they should send a camera home with you and follow you around.
Well, Tuesdays and Fridays, my daughters play softball for their high school. So tonight, we have a game tonight at 6. So it'll probably end around 7:30. And then we'll probably go out to dinner somewhere, 8 o'clock, 8:15. Then I'll come home and just watch Big Fat Winners.
Do parents still do the bit where they bring like the snacks to the games? Like when I was a kid, they used to do that. You get like Capri Suns and handy snacks and things like that. Do they still do that?
They're teenagers.
So what? They don't do that anymore?
Capri Suns. I mean, seriously.
Oh, why are you sleeping on Capri Suns? I still eat Lunchables once, twice a week.
Of course you do. Hey, Kevin, before the reviews, a bit later in the show, we're going to be joined in studio by comedian and actor Lil Rel Howery from Get Out.
Do you know who that is?
Oh, yeah, dude. First of all, Get Out is one of my favorite movies. Well, my second favorite movie of last year. He's probably the best part of the movie. I mean, there's so many great things about that movie besides the script, but he got probably the biggest crowd element because Jordan Peele said that Lil Rel was kind of the audience. His character is meant to be what the audience would think or do or say as you're watching a movie. There's a sequence at the end of Get Out. We're a year into this film now, so I don't think you can really spoil it, but he wins the whole movie. I mean, there's the line that he says about being TSA. He's a TSA guy.
Right.
Yeah, he's like friends with Daniel Kaluuya's character. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? I kind of miss the whole
crowd element.
I miss the crowd element of movies, Kevin, because I seek out movies where there aren't people. Like, I go at like 11:30 in the morning to a movie.
Yeah.
There's no crowd there.
The good thing about his character, Cakes, is that he was the crowd. So, like, if you watch Get Out at home, he's what the audience would be, like, thinking or saying during the movie. Because when you watch a horror film, you're like, don't go in there, don't do this, don't do that. And he was kind of that smart guy on the phone with Daniel Kaluuya's character the whole time, like, saying, get the heck out of there. What are you doing? And even at one point in the middle of the movie, he says that the characters are probably sex slaves. And that's what he says in the movie at one point. And that actually becomes true for some of the characters. So he almost foreshadows a lot of what happens in the film. Like, you think it's a joke, and he's actually right, which is kind of crazy. It's actually a really good character. It's well written.
Yeah, he's really funny. All right, so you saw a couple of films. Rampage is one of them with your boy. We've already given our predictions on what you're going to rate it. So why don't we start with Rampage? By the way, getting 54% on Rotten. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, The Rock is... I would say he's probably the biggest movie star in the world right now. I mean, people go to the movies to watch whatever he's in, which is, you know, it's a rare thing these days. Not many actors have that capability anymore. I mean, look at something like Tom Cruise. People go to see a Tom Cruise movie if it's Mission Impossible, but then you have a film like American Made, which doesn't do well. So, you know, that name power is very hard to come by nowadays. I think DiCaprio probably still has it. The Rock probably has it. Sandra Bullock probably still has it. But George Clooney, people don't go to a movie anymore for George Clooney. They have Suburbicon bombed, unless he's in like an Ocean's movie or something like that. But this film is based on an 80s video game. I didn't play this game. Did you guys remember Rampage with the gorilla? Do you remember that whole game in the 80s?
I remember it. It was a number in the arcades back in the 80s. I remember playing it, though, like a big nerd.
Yeah. I don't remember the game. I mean, I didn't play the game, but if you remember the game in the arcade, if you look closely throughout some of the scenes in the film, you'll find the arcade game, like the actual arcade in someone's office. I mean, the concept of this movie, you kind of have to buy into it to enjoy it. I mean, you have a 30-foot wolf, you have a crocodile the size of a football field, and you have a gorilla that's over 1,000 pounds. They're trying to destroy Chicago. The Rock's character, he adopts or rescues this albino gorilla at a very young age, and after a genetic experiment, he becomes bigger and more and full of rage and tries to destroy Chicago, and Rock tries to save the day. That's the basic plot line. To me, some of the best scenes in the film are the non-action scenes. I mean, the guy who plays George, the gorilla, his name is Jason Lyles, very similar to what Andy Serkis did with motion capture. It's very, very cool. And those scenes actually work. The problem is, I don't know why this movie needed four screenwriters. I mean, the script is awful. And here's the thing. I have no problem going into a mindless action movie. Because you don't look at a movie and you don't go, man, that script is really bad. Sometimes a movie can just be fun on its own, like the Fast and Furious movies. But you have to find a sweet spot. If a script is really bad and it points itself out to the audience and becomes jarring and kind of goes, man, that's a really bad line or something like that, or it's not campy enough, that's when it becomes an issue. Like Fast and Furious understands what it is and it's completely aware of how ridiculous it is when they're throwing cars out of an airplane, but it somehow works because they find it that sweet spot. This movie finds it sometimes and then doesn't find it, and then it ends up feeling way too long. Rock is fine. He's charismatic. He's fun in the movie.
You know, the only reason I would see Rampage is because Negan's in it.
By the way, and I'm getting to him, so he's the best part of the movie.
Of course. He's a great actor.
His character, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, is so great. His character, I would watch a spinoff of his character. So, like, anytime he's on screen, the movie is working really well. His character is trying to, at first, he's against them, and he tries to help them. It's an interesting character that I would like to find out more about. The problem is it kind of gets muddled all up in this massive CGI action fest towards the end. I mean, listen, there's scenes that work. There's scenes that don't work. When I walked out of it, I said, you know, that was fine. That was just okay. It's not horrible. It's not great. And to me, these are the hardest movies to review because there's nothing really to trash about it. There's nothing really to rave about it. So I'm kind of like right in the middle with a 3, which is just like a C. So I don't think it's great. I don't think it's as bad as Baywatch. I saw somebody say it was better than Baywatch, but not as good as Jumanji. I completely agree with that sentiment. Jumanji was a lot of fun. This is just okay. So, I mean, I would go to the matinee if you want to see a big mindless action movie on a big screen. Just know that when you walk out, you're going to go, okay, that was maybe worth like $7, $8, $9, but, you know, you're not going to think about it afterwards.
Wow,
you know?
Kind of shocking. You give a Dwayne Johnson vehicle just a 3. We thought a Lock, 3.5.
Yeah, but 3 is fine.
No.
Yeah.
It means it's terrible.
3 is like a 1.
No, actually, it's not terrible. And if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes,
if you take Negan out, it's probably a 1, to be honest.
No, well, first of all, I don't know if you guys are fans of Dwayne Johnson's movies, but like Andreas and things like that, they have a certain element to them, and they work. I mean, the Rampage reviews are right down the middle. I mean, like I'm probably right in the middle of where everyone is in regards to what they're thinking about. I don't really think anybody's trashing it, and I don't think anybody's really loving it. I mean, if I were you guys, if you want to see it, go for a cheaper ticket. If not, wait for a rental. It's nothing special.
I think the common theme, by the way, in every Dwayne Johnson movie, the thread
is wait for the rental.
Well, no, it's a mindless entertainment.
Well, that, and I think just there's a building falling down in every single Dwayne Johnson movie. There's like a skyscraper. I think his next movie that's coming out is called Skyscraper.
Yeah, it's right. Literally called Skyscraper. It's basically Die Hard with Dwayne Johnson. Now, I will say this. If you look at Dwayne Johnson's career, he's made some great movies. I mean, I thought Rundown was really good. I thought the Painting Game, Michael Bay movie, was really solid. Fast Five and Fast and Furious 7 and 8 were all awesome. He's great in the Fast and Furious movies. It's just that this particular film, the issues are so glaring, and you can just tell it has something to do with the script. And it's weird. I don't want to be that guy who's like, hey, the script has to be great for a mindless action movie, but there's a way to do it. And it kind of gets there, but never fully gets there.
The only Rampage I like was an EPMD rap song back in the early 90s. Featuring LL Cool J, by the way.
Kevin, all your right. Time is running short. What else do you have left to review, sir?
Truth or Dare, which is the Blumhouse movie. So this is the guy who produced Get Out, as well as Happy Death Day. Basic concept here is it's a group of college students who are on spring break. A Truth or Dare game is introduced to them, but it's a deadly version of it. So basically, it's essentially a curse. So if somebody gives you a truth or dare, it could be something along the lines of, like, there's one dare in the film where a girl has to drink an entire bottle of vodka while walking around the roof of her house without falling off. And if not, if she doesn't do it, she dies. So basically the whole concept is if you don't follow through with the truth or the dare, you die. And it's kind of a cool concept in regards to like a Final Destination type of film. The problem is the entire movie is ruined by a horrific character arc and decision that a character has toward the end of the movie that made absolutely no sense. And I'm sitting there in this movie, I'm like, this is intriguing, this is kind of fun, this is interesting, I've never seen anything like this before, I mean, in the Final Destination type of thing, but it was an interesting take on it. But then when you get to the end of the movie, it's like, what the heck just happened? It made no sense, and it actually angered me. I think I was at like a 3 or 3.5 initially, and then I was like, okay, this just got really awful. So I went down to a 2 out of 5, and it just, it didn't deliver. So I would not waste your money on this one. If it comes on HBO or something like that, or Netflix or whatever, maybe watch it there for some of the intriguing qualities of it. But
it was time. Bickle, it was time.
That was Kevin McCarthy.
It just was.
You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin McCarthy TV. And it's not the Kevin McCarthy politician that everybody thinks Kevin is, and they send him vile and angry tweets all the time.
All right. See you later.
Different guy.
Is Kevin okay? Does he cry when we do that?
Fine. He was just droning on and on and on.
Was just part of the bit.
Wasn't he drabby? He was just droning on.
Was he still doing the Rock movie?
And both movies sucked. That was the worst review.
Was he still doing the Rock movie?
No, he was on the Truth or Dare.
Hey, at least we have more stuff to add to the Rock montage of Kevin.
The Rock is in a lot of movies.
Yeah.
But
Rock's silly.
He really has become a good dramatic actor.
The action really is what sells it. The story and script are absolutely terrible. But you have The Rock. He's perfectly physical for the role. Turn your brain off. Have some fun. I gave it a 3 out of 5.
I think The Rock is a good actor. I really do.
You love Dwayne Johnson.
I think he's a good actor. I think he's legit.
Now The Rock is a huge name. He's the second highest paid actor in Hollywood.
He's a really good interview.
And The Rock is fantastic in it.
If this version of The Rock from the 90s were to get into a battle with Hercules.
This is the kind of movie that you go into and you just grab a bucket of popcorn like EB does. And you sit down and just watch it. That's exactly what I gave it. 3.5 out of 5.
That's what I do with every movie.
that was probably the worst movie review segment we've had on in years.
Really?
Yeah, because both movies suck. We had no interest. All he did was drone on. He talked forever. There's just nothing.
I mean, I'm going to watch The Wiz and The Caps. There's no chance of leaving my house to go see a 30-foot wolf climbing up a building in Chicago.
Right.
Does anybody have any desire to do that?
No,
we're not going to.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
When you hear Metallica's cover of Whiskey in the Jar, that means our good friend Neil Greenberg is on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. He's the co-host of Crashing the Net, right here on 106.7 The Fan with our friend Thommy DeLay. He also writes for the Fancy Stats blog for the Washington Post. Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing all right.
Neil. Well, I mean, we're not doing great. I mean, let's be honest.
Did you?
Brutal loss last night.
Yeah. Who did you pick going in?
I picked the Caps as a slight favorite, but they were one of the most likely to upset, along with the Sharks upsetting, and Sharks came out big last night.
Right. Are you a gambler? Are you a sports gambler at all?
Good question. I don't know if we've gotten into this before.
Who does gamble?
I do. I almost moved to Vegas years ago to play poker professionally, but something kept me here.
Wait a second, I do sometimes. Hold on. Let's back this up. I did not know that you were an aspiring professional poker player in the wings, Neil Greenberg. This is interesting news.
Yeah, I played a lot of poker. I play a lot of craps, even though I know the odds are against me, but
that tells me you're a degen. That's what that tells me.
I think if you saw me play craps, you wouldn't say that, because I'm a pretty disciplined craps player. But I like the whole atmosphere of the craps table. I love it. I do horse racing. I like horse racing.
So you don't bet on. So you don't bet on hockey.
No, I don't.
Okay, because you know a lot about hockey. That's why I thought you might be a sports gambler. Anyway. So, like we said, I'm not surprised they lost this game. Not surprised they lost, or how they lost. This is just what they do. They make things interesting. I still think they can win this series. But they made some glaring mistakes, especially late. I felt really good. The guys are killing me. I felt really good after they scored those first two on the five-minute major. I figured they
just
were
too early.
It was early. I felt like they were going to score, you know, four or five goals after that. But I don't know. What were your thoughts on the game last night?
Well, I thought that getting the two goals, especially really quick, according to Elias, that was the fastest two goal spurt in franchise history for Washington in the playoffs. I thought that they would at least be in command of the game, and the Blue Jackets are good. They got Panarin. They got Cam Atkinson. I mean, they got a guy some shoot. So I didn't think that they were going to shut him out, obviously. But you get a two-goal lead early, it frees you up to do a lot of things in terms of controlling the pace of play and just really bogging down and making sure that nothing else happens. And then they got the other goal Columbus did, and that's when I started to worry. Because, like you said, they were playing very undisciplined. You know, Washington's power play didn't look good last night. Thankfully for them, because Seth Jones was shadowing Ovechkin, they turned to Kuznetsov, and rightfully so, to try to create some stuff. But I didn't think Washington – I thought Washington looked good in the places that they looked good, and I didn't think they looked particularly bad in their low areas until probably about midway through the third when things started coming undone.
What kind of tweaks does Coach Trotz make in Game 2 to get Ovi freed up, to get him away from Seth Jones?
Well, he just has to dictate the matchups. And, you know, Barry Trotz says that he doesn't like to do that. He just likes to put his guys out when he puts them out. But, see, to me, that's a mistake. You have home ice advantage for a reason. You have last chance for a reason. You should be dictating the matchups, especially for this team, because their scoring chance numbers, their goal output, all take a dive when they're on the road, because they can be matched up against relatively easy, right? I mean, you put your best defender on Ovechkin, and then if he doesn't score, it becomes really difficult for the Capitals to get any sort of momentum. So I would say the first thing is just get Ovechkin in a spot that you need him. The loss of Jay Beagle necessitates Nicholas Backstrom to take more defensive zone draws, so he's got to go 200 feet down the ice with his line mates. That makes it a little bit more difficult. That means that the third line, like Lars Eller and Brett Connolly, really have to step up, because without secondary scoring, I think it'll be very difficult for Washington. I mean, we saw what happens when they get secondary scoring from Devontae Smith-Pelly. They still struggle. So I really do think that there needs to be a tactical deployment change on the ice.
The DSP goal was set up by Vrana with the helper there. Do we see more of Vrana in Game 2? I think he only logged about 7 minutes of ice time in Game 1.
Yeah, his speed certainly is a difference maker, and I think everyone kind of took notice of that, so that would certainly help. I actually think that the Backstrom-Burakovsky line played really, really well last night. I thought that they were dominating their part of the ice. They were creating a lot of good looks, especially Burakovsky, until close to the end there, but until he had those bonehead plays. But, yeah, Verona, look, speed is the name of the game in the NHL right now. If you have it, especially if you have it outside of the top six, you can make a lot of good things happen, as, you know, Pittsburgh has shown, et cetera. So, yeah, hopefully they get him more involved as well.
Now, I don't know if you heard Trotz's answer. He was asked by someone about Grubby. Do you have that ready? Do you have that ready, Valdez? Let's play this.
Give me one second.
All right, we're going to play it for you because we were talking about it, and I asked the other guys. I said, "How do you guys feel about Grubby, and how do you think he played?" And they, I think average is probably the best answer. But this was Trotz's response when asked about Grubby last night. Listen closely,
Barry. You gave over here. You gave Phil Grubauer a start tonight. What were your thoughts on his performance, and do you go back to him for game two?
Well, that's right now I'm going to reevaluate your question if we go back. I think right now that Phillip's body of work was good. I thought he was fine. I mean, where I'm going to sit down, we'll reevaluate all the goals. We'll reevaluate our team and where we're at, and we'll go from there.
Not like he came out and said Grubby was great, not making a change. You know, that's not the reason we lost. He comes out and says we're going to reevaluate, and he was fine.
I think he was fine. He didn't win the game for him. He didn't lose the game for him.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that response? Lukewarm.
I think it's
best.
A terrible idea to not back up your goaltender publicly, or at least give him the feeling that he's the guy. I mean, if you have two goaltenders, you have none. And if Barry Trotz thinks that he can bounce back from Holtby to Grubauer, I don't think that that's a recipe for success. We've never seen it in the playoffs, at least in the modern era. A little bit surprised. I thought Grubby had some really good saves, and then I thought he had trouble on the shots that you'd think that he'd have trouble on. I mean, two of the three goals against were on high-danger chances, which are high-danger for a reason. So if that's what he's going to be judged on, I think that's probably a little bit unfair considering how the team in front of them. And, you know, one of the keys to the game I talked about even before the series started was it doesn't really matter who's in net. This defense gives up a lot of scoring chances. They give up a lot of odd man rushes. They do not make it easy on the netminder, no matter who it is. So I think Barry Trotz is way better off just picking his guy and going with it, for better or for worse, and then just at least get that mental part of it out for the goaltender, because they got so much other stuff to worry about in the playoffs.
Is Panarin going to skate by 99% of NHL defensemen on the game winner like he did with Dmitry Orlov last night? Was Orlov just like in an impossible situation there, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing that to everybody this season. You look at where he creates his chances, how he goes about and creates them, and what he does for line mates. And this is a kid that's probably one of the most unknown superstars in the NHL right now, right? I mean, I would probably put him up with, we talk about Kopitar. If he were to play on the East Coast, he'd probably be a huge superstar. I would say, you know, Alexander Barkov is also of Florida, is also in that class. But this kid is doing a lot of good things for Columbus. And the danger, though, is if you follow him too closely, that's where, like, Cam Atkinson will really burn you. So he causes a lot of matchup problems, especially for the Caps defensemen. And, oh, by the way, they may be down a defenseman because of the injury that happened last night. That's just going to make it way harder.
You think Biggs is going to play in game two?
I don't know. I'm waiting to hear. I really don't know. I usually rely on Isabel for that type of stuff. I haven't seen anything yet.
Right.
It would be a big help.
They definitely need him.
He's gonna get a nice deal from the Caps or somebody else because of his face-off prowess, his penalty kill. I mean, he's going to make some good coin on his next contract.
Yeah, I doubt it'll be here. I think at least the philosophy that, from what I understand it, for the organization is you don't really have to pay your fourth liners big bucks. Now, somebody might, but I would also I would caution them to doing that. I think the deal he got is probably pushing the envelope. What does he make, $1.2 million? In terms of a fourth liner, they probably can get somebody else for at least that much or cheaper to do something similar. But I think the key, as I said earlier, for Beagle was he takes a lot of the defensive zone draws. which, you know, you can't have Kuznetsov take those draws. So really, Backstrom's your only other guy to do it. But then that takes him out of the offensive zone draws where he can more easily create and help his teammates score points.
Every time we become tight with a player, they leave.
Right.
Brooks, we were.
Yeah, don't have him on your show. You should get Brooks Orpik on the show. I think that would make a lot of Caps fans
that
happy.
That would definitely make Caps fans happy.
I mean, think about it. We had Leik on for a year or a couple years. He left. Then we had Alzi. He left. We got Beagle this year. He's going to leave.
Yeah. Hey. Where Caps players go to move on.
That's right.
They do believe, spots here.
Do you believe game two is a must win?
Yes, without a doubt, because this team's not as good on the road. And I think that Barry Trotz could be outcoached on the road, especially by a guy like Tortorella, who's been around the block a bunch of times. And who, you know, Trotz doesn't want to win, but Tortorella almost seems like he wants to humiliate you in a way. I mean, I think he's just like this evil genius type villain coach that really revels in not only winning, but in winning in humiliating ways. And I think, without a doubt, I mean, it would be a must-win for any team with home ice advantage. You never want to go down 0-2.
Neil, if the Caps lose the first-round series, now it's a big leap at this point, or one game in. If they lose, that's unsurvivable for Coach Trotz, right?
Oh, I would say a second-round loss is also unsurvivable. I mean, yeah, he's playing... I would say for him, it's Eastern Conference Finals or bust in terms of getting another deal. And to be honest with you, I'm not even sure that would necessarily get him to stay in the chair, just considering how everything's unfolded. But yeah, if a first round loss would be a first class ticket out of here.
Does a team like Columbus, you know, when they play on Thursday, it's only like an hour and a half flight. Do they stay around all day Friday and all day Saturday, or do you think they go back?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. My guess is that they go back. I don't think that they would be hanging around because that also helps nullify some of the home ice advantage, right? Because you go home, you kind of recharge,
right,
and then you're right back at it. And like you said, it's not that far of a drive. But I don't know for sure. I'm just guessing.
Neil, thanks as always. That's Neil Greenberg, sports writer and stats geek, not a nerd, for the Washington Post. He's also the co-host of Crashing the Net with Tom Daly right here on 106.7 The Fan. We'll talk to you again soon, Neil.
All right, guys. See you later.
Yep.
See you, man.
Thank you, as always. Very happy to welcome in on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Jeremy Roenick, NHL superstar, 18 years in the league, now works for the NHL on NBC as a studio analyst. JR, what's up?
What's up, my junkies?
JR, that song will never get old. That's Round and Round by Rat.
Of course it is.
I mean, that song is classic and never, ever will get old. I love it. That's your walk-up today.
Hairband 80s, baby. I love it.
What did you like to listen to back in the day, you know, in pregame?
Ooh, good question for JR.
I was a Motley Crue guy. I loved Motley Crue, little Ozzy, you know, and then I'd get just really weird and I'd do 70s disco. So I was all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever meet those guys? You ever meet like Tommy Lee or any of those guys?
Yeah, Vince Neil. Vince lives out in Vegas now.
Vince Neil, I met, I hate to admit this, but down in Tampa at a little adult ballet.
Right. An adult ballet.
A little adult ballet. I met Vince Neil and kind of hung out with him for the night. And that was the last time that I would ever do that with a rock star again.
Is that right?
Yes, that is right.
Oh, yeah,
debauchery there had to be off the charts.
But I bet you it was fun.
Oh, I'm sure it was fun.
I guarantee it was fun.
Let's just say the rock star life is definitely a rock star life. Yes.
Right. Hey, you only live once.
Yeah. JR, before we talk puck and Caps more specifically, I don't think we've talked to you since I saw the video. Like, one of the scariest videos ever. It happened to you less than a year ago. Now, it's scary for me, but not apparently for you, when a rattlesnake was in your garage out in Arizona.
What did he do?
He didn't like call the cops or anything.
He handled it himself.
No, he took an eight and a nine iron out of his golf bag.
Yeah.
And he trapped it, and then he grabbed it by the back of its head and was showing its fangs to everybody.
Kidding.
And then he threw it over his fence.
Are you insane?
You let it live.
He's a madman.
What are you doing? He wrestles alligators.
I'm telling you.
I let it live. No, but I let it live, right?
So I would have cut its freaking head off.
Well, that's what, exactly. And then I would have the all the Greenpeace people going crazy, and the Animal Protection Agency coming after me, and all the all the liberals just yelling at me, and I don't need that either. So whatever.
Right. Well, you didn't have to put it on social media.
But exactly. Nobody would have known.
He is a manly man, because I know if any of us saw that thing in our garage, we're running a million miles away.
That's a perfect thing to put on social media, because I know I'm gonna entertain a lot and anger a lot.
That's true. How often do you see rattlers in your garage?
Well, you see rattlers pretty much every day, especially nowadays. They're all out and they're all hungry right now. So it's getting hot and it's time to sunbathe. I see them seriously every day. I've caught about 20 or 30 of them. So it's crazy.
Wow.
Jeez, you're nuts.
Hey, did you play? I think you played. Did you play in the charity of the event down in Orlando? We had Mark Rippon on.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I think he was one of the guys.
Didn't you play in that? It wasn't too long ago.
It wasn't a charity. It was the celebrity tournament.
It's That's right.
I came in second. Second, right behind Marty Fish.
That's right. Yeah. Marty Fish won it. That's right. It's all coming back. Yeah. I watched a little bit of it. See, the game's strong, man. The game is strong.
It's good. So hopefully I can get it done and win one of these maybe this year in Tahoe. So I'm getting close.
You are. All right. So what do you make of our caps here? A lot of us, we're just going down the woe is me highway, the same old, same old. Now, usually the Caps get out of the first round, but, nothing's easy if you're a Caps fan around here. Should we be panicked or how should we feel about this so far?
Well, Columbus is definitely a bad draw for them. And I say that with a lot of different reasons. And I just don't understand. So you have the first game of the playoffs. Energy should be at an all-time high. Preparation should be an all-time high, and I didn't see anything that impressed me about Washington last night. As much as I love Ovi, he was invisible last night. I thought Backstrom was invisible last night. You make mistakes at critical times of the game when you are taught as a player from the earliest of ages, hockey 101, we say, right? And Barakovsky, who I really love the guy, I love watching him, who's usually very dependable, with 5 minutes left in the game, in the offensive zone, chases Seth Jones behind the net instead of staying right in front of the net, keeping him in front of him, being very protective. And you don't chase a puck handler behind the net in the offensive zone, and he ends up taking a penalty with 5 minutes left. Up 3-2, and then they score on the power play to tie it up. It's just little things like that where you don't think, where you're not prepared mentally, seems to be Washington's downfall time and time again.
Did you agree with Coach Barry Trotz's decision to sit Holtby and play Grubauer in Game 1? What were your impressions of his play in Game 1, and what do you do in Game 2? Do you stick to your guns and stay with Grubauer, or do you shake it up and maybe play Holtby in Game 2?
Listen, I thought the decision could have gone either way, because Grubauer, I think, earned his way into a starting role. He's played really well coming down the stretch, and I don't think he played terrible last night. I think he got put in situations. I mean, listen, when you have Thomas Vanek, out-muscle Brooks Orpik in front of the net as bad as he did last night and not get pushed out, that's not Grubauer's fault. And that was the 2-2 goal game. Then I told you they took the penalty. Now you're on the power play and you don't get the puck out. I mean, Tom Wilson, love Tom Wilson. He's one of those heart and soul guys that you need on your team, and he does everything that you want to do as a coach. But everybody makes mistakes. He couldn't clear the puck twice on the power play, on the penalty kill, and it ends up in the back of your net. That's not Grubauer's fault. So it's the little mental things in the playoffs that end up costing you, and it did for Washington last night, because they have a team. They're playing a team that will not go away. That will grind you and grind you and grind you. And you know what? Columbus pushed them out of the game last night.
I'm reading that, and I didn't realize this as I was watching it, but in the third period, the Caps had a 10-minute stretch where they didn't get one single shot attempt. That seems outrageous to me. How rare is that?
Well, I don't know how much you guys watch me on NBC.
Yeah.
And I'm a Caps fan. I'm an Ovi fan. I used to have season tickets for the Capitals. So when I'm critical on my assessment of their team, it's with frustrating love.
Right.
And I do not understand with a team that has the likes of Oshie, Kuznetsov, Barakovsky, Backstrom, Ovechkin, Carlson, Orlov. I mean, I just named off 10 players right there that are very, very high skilled. I would call them stars.
Mm.
And yet other teams that are not as good on paper work harder than them and beat them. And consistently Washington comes and thinks that just because they're talented, that they can just win hockey games. To win playoff games, you have to be gritty. You have to be mean. You have to work harder. You have to want it more. You have to have more sense of desperation. And when Washington loses, it's because they don't have any of that. And the other team beats them in those categories. Talent, you know, hard work will beat talent 7 days a week when talent doesn't want to work. And sometimes that's, you know, Washington falls into that where they get, you know, just kind of in a funk mentally and just forget about the work part.
You know, a guy who's been in a funk in the playoffs, but though he played well last night, was Bobrovsky. He was 3-10 before last night's win against the Capitals, but it's a guy who's won the Vezina twice during the regular season, but it has an awful playoff record. Talk about his play, and can he be the guy that if Columbus beats Washington, can he carry them deep into the playoffs?
Well, Bobrovsky has proven to be a dependable goaltender, you know, time and time again. He won a Vezina trophy. He's turned a average team, mediocre team, into a very good team. And, you know, he made some big saves last night. Is the two of the goals from Kuznetsov were kind of tough to, stop. One got deflected. One was a bomb of a shot on that rush. But they're power play goals. I thought he really didn't have much of a chance on Smith-Pelly's goal either, because it was a beautiful play and a beautiful pass by Verana. But he made the big saves when he needed it, and he allowed his team. He kept his team close enough to where they can catch up, and that's what you want from your goaltender.
Mm. So, Jeremy, we took a bunch of calls early in the show, and most Caps fans are, you know, they take the approach, look, this is what they do. You know, they let us down. They have great regular seasons, but in the postseason, they just, you know, they play long, drawn-out series, and they play down to their opponents, and, you know, eventually they lose, usually to Pittsburgh. That being said, how do you feel about Game 2? What changes should the Caps make? And do you feel like the Capitals still win the series?
Actually, I didn't pick Capitals to win the series. I picked Columbus to win the series in six games. I think it's a bad matchup for them, and I think Columbus coming into the series, they were one of the hottest teams in the National Hockey League. They're scoring over 4 goals per game. The power play was running at 50%, and you look at the way that they play of a very grinding game, what I told you. It's a frustrating team to play against. It's the exact opposite of a team that you want the Washington Capitals to play. Now, they're not out of it by any means. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it is a long series. There is no question. When the Capitals play the type of game that a playoff-style team will play, like when they play like at the outdoor game, when they played a fast, you know, gritty, hard game against Toronto, they crushed them. You know, they played Winnipeg. They came into Winnipeg. You know, Ovi got his 600th goal on an unbelievable game played against one of the best teams in the league because they wanted it more. They're way still in the series. One game doesn't make a series, but you're not going to do it by just putting on the skates and showing up. You got to put your hard hat and your work boots on, and you have to work for it.
JR, any way the Flyers bounce back after the bloodbath in Game 1 against the Pens? That was just ugly.
It was ugly. You know, and obviously me being a Flyer, and one time I've been in this rivalry, and disliked the Penguins as a Philadelphia Flyer. That was a beatdown of major proportions.
Yeah.
And tonight's game is going to dictate whether Flyers have any chance to see if they have the pride
to bounce back after getting embarrassed by their arch rival in the first game of the playoffs. I mean, 7-0 is totally unacceptable, and I just don't think their goaltending is up to par to beat the two-time Stanley Cup champions. As much as I hate to admit that, but man, that's just that was a bad first game. Flyers better show up and show some pride tonight. That's for sure.
Anything else surprise you or impress you of the game ones?
Crazy to me is that there's so many lopsided games. Boston winning 5-1 was crazy. I think with Nashville winning 5-2, even though that was a closer game than the score indicated. Usually playoffs are ones, you know, San Jose winning 3-0. You know, we're used to low scoring games, tight games, overtime games. We've only had one overtime game, which was yours last night in the first 8 games. I'm surprised that these games aren't a little tighter, but I'm kind of thinking that might change here in the next couple of days.
Yeah.
JR, it's always good to catch up. Hopefully, if you're ever in D.C., you can swing by and hang out with us in studio, okay?
Oh, I love my junkies, man. You guys are the best.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you, JR.
Thanks for calling in, man.
All right. See you guys.
Jeremy Roenick, 18-year NHL vet, now
he's
studio
such a good
analyst
guest
for NHL on NBC. He's great. Love him. We're joined by Lil Rel Howery and his feature act, Jay Alexander. They're performing at Arlington Cinema and Drafthouse this weekend. For tickets, go to arlingtondrafthouse.com for all the information. Welcome, fellas. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us,
man.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool.
How you guys doing?
Good, man.
Just got in town?
Got in town yesterday afternoon. This is a really big airport here.
Which one did you go to? Dulles?
Dulles. So, you know, it's funny. I didn't realize it was I thought we was going to two places. Like, I guess we're going to Dallas first and then D.C. it's called Dulles.
Dulles. Right. Hilarious. For a little, you didn't really look at the ticket that closely,
like,
right?
I didn't know we had connections from Dallas.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm like,
we're
Virgin turned it to Southwest. Then we go to different places.
You never heard of Dulles.
Where'd you come from?
I came from L.A. Well, I'm from Chicago, but I came from I live in Los Angeles now.
Right. In L.A. But is Dulles considered a big airport compared? I mean, LAX is every bit as big, right?
Well, Dulles is an international airport.
Dulles has a train. Any airport that has a train, to me, I think is a bigger airport.
I hate that. I hate when you're in the wrong terminal and you got to get on the shuttle or the tram or whatever you call those things.
I actually like it because it's about 10 minutes from my house.
Oh, that's dope.
That's why I love it.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I hate flying out of Reagan right here, and BWI is a nightmare.
Oh, God. I didn't realize all these airports was here.
Do you live near LAX?
No, not at all. I live in West Hollywood, so I'm like 30 minutes, depending on what time it is.
Right. Did you have to deal with the LA traffic then, where you're going? Or?
Yeah, it depends. Well, I moved to West Hollywood to be closer to Fox Studios.
Right.
I was shooting one of my shows at, and nice. I was standing in the Valley at first.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you buy or rent?
No, I'm renting. LA, I don't think that's where you should buy. Like, I think when I buy a home, it's going to be in the South somewhere.
Yeah.
Just so I can get a really big house.
A big house and, like, a tax shelter, too. Like, place with no income tax.
Yep.
That's
how long have you lived in L.A.?
3 years now.
Do you like L.A.?
I love it. I mean, I love every place for what it is.
Jason
I stayed in New York, too.
I love L.A. That's what Valdez is laughing back there. Jason loves L.A.
There you go. I'm not saying I would live there.
L.A.'s dope, though. It is. The weather's dope. It's just, I like driving in L.A. Like, I like driving. I love driving through Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you're doing well, L.A. is dope.
Oh, yeah. If you have FU money, it's
the place to
be. You
might be the first person ever that said, I like driving through L.A. The traffic is even worse than here. It's paralyzing.
That's if you coming from the Valley. And all. Like, I stay in my area. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. I drive through Beverly Hills and stuff like that. I don't like taking that trip to the Valley.
So then do you run into a lot of famous people then?
Yeah, I got a lot of famous friends now, I guess.
Right. But but when you're driving around, like, so do you see them at the grocery? Like, you know what I mean?
That's the great thing about L.A. is randomly see, like, Tom Cruise at a Starbucks or Eddie Murphy getting called. Like, you know, it's just.
I went to this has been years ago, but I was in Santa Monica visiting a friend. And I went jogging, and I bumped into Steven Spielberg. right? Oh, okay, wow. Whatever. He didn't know me, but I literally bumped into him. Yeah. And then I go, and I'm going to the Fifth Street Promenade, or is that what they call it? Or Third Street
Third
Promenade?
Street.
Whatever
Third
the hell
Street.
They call it. Yep. And then Matthew McConaughey, rollerblades right in front of me. I mean, that kind of stuff happens.
The funny thing is, you got to be cool about it. Like, you can't just,
yeah,
like,
run
up on
it. Like, yeah, you can't act like, yeah.
It's Spielberg.
Cool.
Love E.T. Is this bring up, like, an old movie?
I wasn't cool, though. I did one of these.
Well, I told you that story when I was in the hotel pool in Santa Monica years ago.
Right.
And Sean Penn got into the pool. Right next to me. I was the only guy in the pool. Sean Penn just got in the pool. And then his hot-ass wife, Robin Wright, got in right after.
His wife at the time.
At the time.
Yeah, that. Yeah.
Hot. Yeah, sure.
It was you three? You could have had a
Well, they had a kid, too. But, yeah.
Right.
It was the four of us.
Yeah.
The
kid kind of ruined the vibe.
Yeah. So, Rel, how much has your life changed since you were in Get Out? I mean, that has to be
a life changer.
I was on a good streak, right?
Yeah.
And then Get Out happened. What it did change was my movie career. Because right after that, you know, I went from auditioning for movies to just getting straight offers.
Oh. How did you get the part? Can you take us through how you landed that role?
Well,
in
first,
Get Out?
Jordan told me about it at a Spielberg party, actually.
<That's> and funny.
He was like, yeah, I wrote a horror film. I was like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? <'Cause> like, right. He's not known for this. Like,
yeah,
oh,
right.
Cool, brother. Good luck for that. You know? but he was telling me about it, and he was saying that, you know, he would like for me, you know, at once, you know, maybe come in and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I read the script and was like, they gonna let you do this? I'm in, brother.
Give it to you? Or you still have an audition?
I auditioned, you know, because it's one of those things where, like, even if he wanted me, the studio didn't know me like that. You know
right,
what I mean? So
right.
I auditioned, but when I was reading it, it felt like it was mine. Like, it just felt like, it
right.
felt like I was, how I talk, I'm like, did he write this for me or something? Like,
right.
That's what it felt like. And then it was just a natural thing. I mean, like, even when I booked, I remember going for the callback and we did the original scene that we had to cut out the last scene. And I'm outside waiting on my Uber and Jordan comes out and say, and there's literally people in there waiting to audition for the same
right.
part. He's like, I'm about to offer this to you. So I'm about to call your agents. This is yours.
Nice.
And I just walked for blocks tearing up because I don't even know why I was so happy. Because it wasn't a big budget.
Right,
I mean, we
right.
didn't know what this was going to be, but it was just, I can't even, I don't know.
You knew it was
I knew
huge.
It was something.
You knew
was
it was
gonna,
huge.
I don't know if I knew it was, I didn't know what it, I don't know if I knew it was huge. I knew,
you knew
it was special.
You knew
it was
different.
Something special about it. Yeah.
Great
yeah,
script.
Yeah.
So when he says that, we're going to offer this to you, do you, that like, in your position, do you have leverage or you just take whatever they offer? How's that work? We were offered a deal by ESPN 10 years ago, or 15 years ago now, and we asked for double. And they told us to F off.
Yeah.
So we don't really know how to
we're
do that.
We're true negotiators.
Well, it's funny you say that. At that time, that was my first major motion picture, so it wasn't no leeway to be like, yo, this is what I want. I was like, I was just happy with the offer.
Yeah, see, we weren't really happy.
After that.
We're stupid.
After that, you get the bag.
Now you get.
Yeah.
Now you got some leverage.
Nah,
Yeah, but the money was still good for that part.
The back end was good.
Back end, yeah.
Oh, so you had negotiated that in?
Well, it was
Was that standard?
It was a low budget movie. That's what we all forget, that it wasn't a big budget.
Mm-hmm.
It was low budget.
$4.5 million.
It was less than that at first.
Was it really?
That's where they gave more money once they saw how good it was for us to reshoot the end and stuff. So, but
right.
No, it wasn't. Nobody got anything up front that was, nobody, none of the actors. I mean, like, Bradley Whitford was joking, like, if they had a bigger budget, none of us would have been casted.
Right. So because of that,
Bradley Whitford, was he the dad?
He's the dad, yeah.
Yeah.
He's been in a bunch of movies, too.
Yeah,
which that's Brad, like, nobody got anything for real.
Right.
Yeah.
So because of that success, then what movies came your way? Were they just giving them to you?
Uncle Drew was the first one that was offered to me that I shot with Kyrie last summer. Then I got this movie Bird Box I shot with Sandra Bullock. Then Brittany Runs a Marathon I did with Jillian Bell. Then I did this movie with Eric Andre, Bad Trip. And right now I just look at I turned down a lot of stuff, actually, which is crazy.
That's
but
it's crazy.
Offers.
So
after the movie, literally the day after the movie came out, I was auditioning for stuff the day before.
Crazy.
And right after Get Out came out, it was just me just having dinner and just having a conversation. Like, oh, you want to do it? I'm like, all right.
So how many different offers are coming in, let's just say, during the year? What do you get, like 5 to 10 offers?
Yeah. I mean, I get scripts maybe every other day, a new script that, you know, I look at. And I just met with Paramount. about some
That's stuff. That's the other thing that I learned when I was out in L.A. We visited a friend. I was there for a week, and they did the whole thing, all the touristy things, and he went to the parties and everything. Everyone has a script. Scripts are everywhere. Oh, yeah. I went to a party, and they're literally in the front yard, in the grass, were scripts.
They just want to hit it.
There's no way you can read it. There's no way you can
Everyone has all those scripts that are sent to you.
No, you don't. I mean, I've learned to skim read. It has to be something that, like, I usually have my agent or my manager look at it first. Mm-hmm. Tell me what it is, and it's like, okay, this don't even sound like nothing I would want to do. Which is crazy. It's fun turning down. Like, I've turned down some stuff that, like, with the offer, the money offer was insane.
Right.
But I was like, eh.
Now you can be selective.
I've been selective, though. That's what I've been selective when I wasn't supposed to be selective.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're supposed to just take, like, no, I've been like, and that's how I am now. It's so funny because now I think my friend, I know people think I'm just, because I have so many movies coming out this year, people probably think I'm just saying yes to everything, but it's not. I'm really picky about that. And I wanted to make sure everything was different. And I'm doing what I want. Like, Uncle Drew, I had to do that movie. I'm a basketball fan. It was like, why would I not do this movie?
All right, we're white trash, so we need to know the biggest offer that you turned down.
I'm not going to tell you that.
Come on. You can't share that with us.
Nope.
So you won't tell
I'm from Chicago. I don't want nobody to know how much I'm really getting.
So you won't tell us how much you made on the back end to Get Out?
Nope.
I bet it was substantial.
Well, he's turning stuff down. He's got money.
Yeah.
I'm doing okay, man.
I know you are.
I pay child support.
that's a big chunk of it.
Yeah, I'm just I'm taking care of everybody. I'm doing okay.
Just know he can't leave his receipt in the ATM. That's all you need.
Yeah, that's funny you say that. We were talking about that yesterday. Yeah. I was like, if I left this receipt here, so I was like, where is this guy?
Oh, really? Dear God.
It'll get on Twitter somehow.
You got all this money in your checking account?
I'm not saying anything to
careful,
him. Stuff
man. What are you
say.
Doing?
He's not doing
I'm
that.
Just a guy who likes to wear jogger suits and buy a pair of glasses every once in a
while. Well, does that mean that you have a fancy ride then? Are you a car guy?
No, not. I mean, I got a Benz, but it's L.A. Everybody got a Benz.
Everybody's got
That's
one.
True.
Is it a new one? Is it a new one?
Yeah, it's decent.
Good.
You know, it's a good year.
But you're not out there buying Ferraris and everything.
Nah, I'm not saying I won't do that.
Ah,
eventually. That could happen
someday. Yeah.
Would you rent one just so you could just, you know, get on TMZ or something?
Nah, hell no.
Rent one and go to like one of those lunch spots. What's the lunch spot we went to, Cakes, where we tried to get seen?
We went to the Ivy. We did the worst tourist trap ever.
We got turned down at every club because it was all dudes, no girls.
Yeah, that's LA's a tripped up. I mean, it's
LA's
funny.
Hardcore,
it's
man.
It's funny now. Like, I can go. I think it's fascinating that I can go anywhere now. I remember my first LA experience, it wasn't like that. But now I just be like, I don't even think they'd be knowing me. And I would pull up and go, I'm like, oh, hi. I was going to wait in line, but cool, bro.
When I was in LA, bro, I went to, I did the whole, you know, Beverly Hills and Bel Air. Mm-hmm. And I found out where Jennifer Aniston lived. And I just went to her house with my family.
So creepy.
With my wife and kids in the back of the rental car.
And then you just parked there?
I parked out front of her gate. For like 20 minutes.
Wow. 20 minutes?
Yeah,
that's so, that's
you're
so creepy.
Your wife, please.
Your wife was okay with this?
Creepy.
She wanted to do it more than I did.
Then tell them what you did with Lenny Dykstra.
Oh, you know Lenny Dykstra?
Yeah.
Dykstra?
Remember Lenny
I hung out with Lenny Dykstra for like 8 hours. Just got hammered with him. dude, it's nuts. All he wanted to do was get on Backpage and look for hookers. That's all he wanted to do.
That's why they didn't shut Backpage down because of that.
Yeah.
Oh, he's
Did
bitter.
You see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. FBI
what's Lenny going to do?
I don't know.
He's got to find a new site.
I think they took out the personals or whatever they were on Craigslist, too,
they
because
did.
Of the same thing.
The FBI is shutting down.
The hookers are distraught. Where are the hookers going to go?
I guess you just...
Instagram, man.
Instagram? Yeah. Like, Cakes, what are you going to do now?
I don't know, man. I'm in quite a bind over here.
Like, I guess we got to walk the streets again. Back to the streets.
How long had you known Jordan Peele?
I've known Jordan for a while now. When he was doing Key and Peele, I had a sketch series I was on with a couple of guys. We did a show called Friends of the People that was on True TV. So we was True TV's first scripted series. We was on that for 2 seasons. But at the same time, they was doing Key and Peele. The first time me and Jordan met was at a comedy festival in Montreal, the Just for Last festival. And we was at a Funny or Die party lit, just talking. It was almost like that sketch that they do where they're like we just talking crazy. Like we was two dudes with glasses talking like gangsters for no reason.
Right.
At a comedy party. It was just weird. But
he's hysterical. He
was so cool, man, and he's a good. he's legit a good dude. I'm like happy to call him my friend now. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Our history with Key and Peele was our producer behind
this
the glass.
Is embarrassing.
He
by
came
the way.
To us like I want to say this is 8 or 9 years ago.
It was right before the Comedy Central show.
Yeah, like
blew up.
You know, pitching a guest. Hey, we've got this comedy duo. Their name's Key and Peele, and we're going to book them on the show. We're like, Key and who? Who are these guys? Why are we having them on the show? And now, look at Key and Peele, the successes those guys are having.
We had no idea.
We have no
Did it go
whatsoever.
Well or did it go poorly?
No,
I can't
great.
Remember.
I think it went
great.
It
was awesome.
It was awesome because they were awesome.
Because right. Key is just, you know, he's just hysterical.
Are they still tight or
they're
no?
Still close.
They're
yeah.
still tight. They're still it's all close. Good.
Yep. Both those guys are just killing it now.
It's a great video of when Jordan wins the Oscar and Keegan just losing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like at some, I don't know what he was watching it at, but he's just losing his mind, man.
Did you go to the Oscars?
Yeah, I was there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Did you go to parties afterwards?
Yeah, I went. So I went to the official governor's ball party thing, which was boring. Oh, God, it was so boring. And then I went to Jay-Z and Beyonce's gold party.
Oh,
and that was lit.
Look at that.
Yeah, look at that.
That was
solid.
Super lit. It was one of the best parties I've ever
we
been to.
We stood next to, we have a little, we Jay-Z did a festival that we did here years ago. And we stood next to Beyonce on stage right when Jay-Z was performing. That's maybe the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Like in a face. It's ridiculous.
She is gorgeous. Man, but she's gorgeous inside. It's actually cool now that I can, like, because I just hosted, like, Beyonce's mom, the wearable gala thing. And, which she made me out. It was just, I know them now. It's just like,
isn't that crazy?
Yes.
Could you call Jay-Z
I saw
right
Black
now?
Panther with
could
them.
Could you call Jay-Z?
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I think Allison Williams is hot as balls.
She's so cool. She's so cool.
I just love her.
She's so, like, she... Her coolness makes her even more
makes
attractive.
Her hotter.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you
she's
know
so
that
cool.
Solange? Is that how you say her name? Solange. How do you say the
Solange?
Solange.
Yeah.
Solange. Is she cool or is she crazy?
No, she's not crazy. She's cool.
Right.
Yeah. She's real chill.
Why was she beating up Jay-Z in the elevator?
Hey man, look, man. They didn't put out Lemonade and the album. Look, they both talk about it, man. Just listen to the music, man.
Right. Yeah.
All right, you guys. What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.